LeBron looks like LeBron again, if only for one night. Team USA has an open roster spot, or do they? And we talk about the Suns using Kevin Durant as a small ball five. That and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends. Welcome to a special Leap Day edition of No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. I am back, and I am joined, as always, by senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports. It is my man, it is your man, it is everyone's man. It's Dan Devine. What's up, buddy?
I'm so glad to have you back, Jake. Did you miss me nearly as much as I missed you?
I missed you. I was also, during the daytime, not thinking about you. And during the nighttime, definitely not thinking about you. But in that little hour in between,
there's like a sliver of space in there where I was really at the forefront of your thoughts.
For sure. I was like, well, man, now I feel like
our relationship is imbalanced, and I'm a little uncomfortable about it, and I'm feeling a little exposed and vulnerable, but I guess that's okay. Maybe this is the wrong show for that. That's okay. I'm excited to have you back and to talk about NBA basketball in a very straightforward way.
No, I woke up yesterday to a lovely tweet from JJ Redick shouting out your work, and that warmed my heart and made my day, started everything off on a good foot. So, yeah, man, we're definitely having some good mutual positivity towards one another, I would say.
Of course. I mean, I think we all expected that the way this all would work out was that I would be getting shouted out by JJ Redick. I think that was a big part of our plan when we started the show. Like, we're just going to get the influencers on board, and then we're going to grow the show organically from there. This was a way to do it.
How dare you call him an influencer? He is the lead NBA analyst at ESPN now. He'll be calling the finals. Put some respect on that man's name.
Oh, shit. I mean, maybe that ruins the opportunity to get him on the show. What do you think? I don't know. Did I just insult him? Is that what happened?
No, I think
John, edit it all out. Edit it all out. Cancel. Abort.
I think it's all fine. JJ knows that we respect his work as much as he respects ours. Today, speaking of our work, we're going to discuss Team USA basketball.
Speaking of our work, let's do some.
The defensive play of a couple of Hall of Famers. But first, we've got some news roundup. The Hornets have signed Alexei Pokuševski.
Yes!
That's not really the news, the big news in Charlotte. I will say,
no!
Poku, I do think he's not really going to play for the Hornets based off of my reporting. I think he's going to be a leading member of the Greensboro Swarm for the remainder of this season. There was definitely some two-way stuff with Golden State, and I heard some Washington buzz for him. So I don't think that we're going to be seeing Poku running around the floor with Brandon Miller too much, but maybe he does get called up to the big club. But the big club, they have called up Brooklyn Nets assistant general manager Jeff Peterson to be the franchise's next head of basketball operations. That was, of course, first reported by ESPN this morning, Thursday, February 29th. The leap day that marks Tyrese Halliburton's sixth birthday. Happy birthday, Tyrese.
Think about the growth, yeah, like the developmental curve he's on to be this good at six. Unbelievable. I have a six-year-old and she's not nearly this good.
She can't uphold an entire franchise where maybe basketball has the deepest roots of any city in the NBA.
She's barely tying her shoes. Like, we're working hard on that. So yeah, I mean, I think the sky's the limit for Halliburton at this point.
There you go. No, I think, I mean, we wrote this in our article, I guess it was last Monday now, maybe two Mondays ago. Who knows what time is these days, when the Brooklyn Nets relieved Jacques Vaughn of his coaching duties and the spotlight went on to Sean Marks, and people were wondering whether or not he would be able to be in position to make this next coaching decision. Jeff Peterson's basically been mentioned as the leading candidate for this role ever since Rick Schnall and Gabe Plotkin, who were former minority owners of the Atlanta Hawks back when Jeff Peterson was in the Atlanta Hawks front office before he came to Brooklyn, that there was some synergy there, a lot of familiarity, and that he was going to be a name heavily involved. Trajan Langdon, the general manager in New Orleans below David Griffin, who was also a finalist for the Washington Wizards job that went to Michael Winger last year, was definitely a primary candidate here as well. And as Mark Stein reported yesterday on his Substack, Matt Lloyd, the executive in Minnesota who was in Orlando for a long, long time. And Tim Connelly brought him on board with the Timberwolves. I guess that was 2022 when that first happened. He was definitely a name involved here. And the Hornets definitely did like a interview search of some sorts. I've spoken to several people who were interviewed, but it does seem like this was that Peterson was someone that was on their radar from the beginning. And this is kind of one of many of the steps that are going to be taken in Charlotte to kind of turn this thing around under the direction of this new ownership group. There's a new practice facility on the way. There's $1 million upgrades coming to the arena. There's definitely just this wave of newness and an air of turning the corner and reinvesting in a organization that they're hoping to make a destination at some point. So any thoughts from you, Dan, on this move?
The main thing is just that if you're going to, obviously a team that has not been as successful and has not won as much as they had hoped these last few years and really doesn't have a significant legacy of winning to speak of. But if you're going to take over a place like that, like this is not a bad time to get in on the ground floor of the Hornets, right? Like you've got, I mean, LaMelo Ball, obviously so much is going to come down to just, can he stay healthy? But he's about, you have him under contract, just about to start that new max deal off of his rookie extension. So like you have him there. You have Brandon Miller, who has looked every ounce like he deserved to be that number two pick in the draft and like a malleable star in the making, somebody that you can build around on both ends of the floor. You have Mark Williams at center when he's healthy. You just brought in Grant Williams, who I think was a really worthwhile, like, you know, that is not a wild contract to bring in if you can, you know, reclaim the value of that. You're probably getting another top four, top five pick. The big question is just going to be, I would imagine this is like you are at the start of something rather than expected to kick it into high gear right away. Although maybe I'm wrong about that, but like you're probably not going to have major cap space this summer. There's the Miles Bridges unrestricted free agency to resolve. You know, maybe you get off of Davis Bertans' deal, you know, like pay the exercise, the early termination or whatever. You kind of get him on the way out there and you see what you want to build. But like, there's some young talent there. There's multiple draft picks. You just brought in those two 2027 first rounders at the trade deadline. So there's your like plus first round capital and some new second rounders. You figure out what you got in Trey Mann. And, you know, like there's some stuff to figure out there. It's not like you're walking into a job where the cupboard's bare and you're capped out and you've got sort of no runway. So I think from Jeff Peterson's perspective, you know, if you've got ownership that's representing that it wants to, you know, wants to win, wants to go after it, but also is going to have a long view, seems like a pretty decent opportunity.
It does. I think, you know, one of my like parlor games I was playing with people around the league the last couple of weeks was just asking them if you would have rather taken this job or the Wizards job that opened last year. And context is super important in that, like, the Wizards are going to have definitively a long runway. Like, they would not trade Bradley Beal forever, by all accounts. The front office did not have ownership permission to do that. Then they finally did. And this is going to be a long, slow burn for Washington with plenty of runway. But yeah, Charlotte has a lot of pieces in place already. They've got these picks. It's definitely interesting to see what will come. The other thing, there's been like plenty of speculation that Steve Clifford won't be back next year. Jeff Peterson.
Steve Clifford certainly seems to be talking as if that's not going to be the case. Like every pre or post game press conference is like, well, here's the most honest thing I can say right now about how badly we've done or what the state of the NBA is. And it's like, well, yeah, this is incredibly refreshing, but it sure seems like a guy who's not going to be around much longer. And he's just going to say it all while he can.
Yeah, I'm not reporting this. Just he was in Brooklyn when Peterson was there. So there's just some type of connectivity there that I would think would not just like if it was someone coming in who had no ties to that guy, it's very easy to just kind of slit the man's throat and move along. But there's much more of a connection there than I think other situations would have been. So just something to throw out for all the people who love little tea leaves. In Los Angeles, on the other side of the country, LeBron went nuclear as the Lakers erased a 21-point Clippers lead in the fourth quarter last night. He doesn't got it every night, man, but when he's got it, he's fucking got it still. It's pretty crazy. It really is.
Absolutely. And it's like, this is the reason it's hard to quit them, right? Like, the Lakers are 32-28. They're not a great team. They've been closer to average, if not like slightly below that, for most of the season. But you get a game against like a top three, top four team in the West, you know, top five offense, top 10 defense. And LeBron just goes out and outscores them himself in the fourth quarter. Like, this is the ceiling that they can scrape at, right? And there's, you know, it's a very basic kind of analysis, but sometimes basic things have some truth to them. Like, how many teams do you really believe are going to be significantly better than the one that's led by LeBron James and Anthony Davis in a 7-game series? There are some. They ran into one this past postseason, but you can make a lot of you can get a lot done before you reach those matchups. And then sometimes, you know, who knows? Maybe you don't reach one of those matchups, or things break your way, and all of a sudden you're a surprise finalist, you know? So outside of the general, we kind of can't speak enough about how remarkable it is that LeBron is at this level, at this age, with this many miles on him, about to hit, right, 40,000 career points, which I don't know if I would have ever imagined anyone would ever get to, but he's not only getting there.
I thought you were going to ask me if I ever imagined that for myself, which the answer would be no. I never thought I'd score 40,000 NBA points in my career.
I mean, your level of confidence, I would imagine it would have at least crossed your mind once. Like, yeah, I can get there. I can get to the 40,000, 10,000, 10,000 club, a club that exists now or is about to exist.
Maybe in my rec league that I have assembled the best team possible, and we are in first place and marching our way to a title run in April. But that's neither here nor there.
What is, it's here because we're going to stay here for a second. What is your role on this rec league team? Like, what are you, a 3-and-D guy? Well, are you a heady point guard?
I'm the captain, which means I am the GM and the coach, and I'm the third in our big three.
Wait a second. If you're the GM and the coach, then who do you leak to? Like, who's the rec league insider that you need to be dropping nuggets to?
Well, no one leaks to me, so I don't return the favor.
Oh, okay. All right. I see how it works. The last sort of general thought on the Lakers is, quiet as it's kept, because
not by rec league.
No, we'll get back to the rec league later. Don't worry about it. We'll do a rec league deep dive on Divine Intervention when I have you on.
Let's do it.
That sounds good. John, edit this part out. The last thing on the Lakers. So the big conversation has sort of been all season long, like, that offense isn't good enough. That offense isn't good enough. There's not enough shooting. There's not enough playmaking. LeBron's got to do too much. AD's not shooting any threes, whatever. Quietly, it's only 6-week span, so we'll see, you know, take it for what it's worth. But since the middle of January, they are second in offensive efficiency. So they are up there with like your Bostons and your, you know, the Suns, like that, as they've got everybody together. Again, the ceiling that they can scrape at is awfully high. Whether you can get there consistently enough or not remains to be seen.
LeBron, speaking of the king, he's going to be playing for Team USA this summer. That's been pretty just like understood and accepted for a long time now. The Athletic put out a longer list of guys who are expected to be part of the roster. So we've got LeBron, Steph, which Steve Kerr, the connection there seems pretty clear. That was always going to be the case. Kevin Durant, Joel Embiid, which asterisks if healthy, that's probably the biggest one. All this stuff is definitely dependent on if healthy and like how long do these guys go through May and June and how much do they have left in the tank. Jason Tatum, Devin Booker, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton, Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, and Drew Holiday, which would leave a 12th spot open. So a couple of things I'll just say before we get to the 12th spot, which KD was talking about this, and we'll get to this after the break. When I was down in Atlanta, someone asked him post-game about the Olympics and why it's important for all these guys to play. And he basically mentioned that these guys all kind of agreed already that they were going to do it and they're going to hold each other accountable. And you committed. Don't you back out now. Don't you back out, Steph. Don't you back out, Jason Tatum. And I think the Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Halliburton inclusions, they're the two holdovers from the FIBA World Cup team, where I would think that if we're getting to Well, before we get that, Bam Adebayo, I'm not surprised, being that he was someone that I was told Team USA wanted to play in the World Cup. And after his finals run, ended up being a no-go. So the glaring weakness of front court depth and all that type of stuff for FIBA or from the World Cup, they are filling with Joel Embiid, Anthony Davis, and Bam Adebayo. So that's a quite a call to action after leaving yourself very susceptible inside the paint. And the 12th guy, you know, to go back to that, Ant and Tyrese are the holdovers. I was not going to be surprised if Mikal Bridges makes this list too, because if there's anyone left from the World Cup team that seemed to be a favorite of Steve Kerr outside of those two guys, and Ant and Tyrese, it would be him. I personally think that he would be a very switchable, malleable guy who could just plug and play in many lineups, and it'd be valuable to have him stashed deep on the bench. Another guy that I think would be perfect as a 12th man and would just like accept that role is a long shot for sure, but give me Aaron Gordon, man. I think he'd be just awesome as a guy who'd be so pumped to be there. He's never going to get any all-star recognition like all these guys. He's not really going to ever be considered more than a number 3.5 option on a team, even though he's absolutely flourished, obviously, in Denver, and has become best friends with Nikola Jokic as they have clinched a title and hope to win another one. I just think he'd be great vibes guy, great defensive energy guy, and his passing feel that really helped unlock Denver's offense would be really valuable as a short roll guy, just as like a DHO guy with all these scorers. And you're going to need someone. I mean, Bam kind of, that will be his role. So like, you're going to need someone outside of him if he gets in foul trouble who's like willing to do that. Because all these other guys, they like to get theirs. And it'll be, Tyrese obviously is spraying and peppering the ball around the court, but it would just be interesting to have more of a complimentary piece to me. Dan, I think you have a different type of player in mind.
Yeah, well, I've got a couple of ideas, but I love that. I mean, I think especially you start sketching out the pathway, and you're like, you're going to have to deal with Canada. You're going to have to deal with some really great athletes that are,
Germany.
You're going to have to deal with Germany and the physicality of the bigs that they've got there with Mo Wagner, Franz Wagner, and Daniel Theis. And like, he matches up physically really well with them. The potential for if Jokic plays for Serbia and you're dealing with, the Serbian front court, like obviously they bring a lot of bigs to the game, and like seeing him have to try to deal with Jokic would be interesting. So I like that as an actual, like, real basketball answer.
Thank you.
I don't have as many of those. One, and our super producer John Gennaro mentioned it sort of in the green room before we started, but I think Chet Holmgren would be a fun pick, especially as you're looking to like build the bridge to the next version of Team USA. Like, obviously, so much of this is about like this last ride for this like last generation of all-time American talent, but you also are still going to have to, as you know, with Anthony Edwards being there and Tyrese Halliburton there, you're peppering in the, here's who's going to be, holding this up for the, as we move forward. Chet has already been part of the I think like U18 or the U16, whatever the team was that wound up playing overseas, and they wound up going up against Wembanyama. This feels like a natural progression. Maybe he's, the end of the bench guy, but you need another shot blocker. You need another guy who can do it. Like, bigs who can shoot and handle. This is the FIBA game, right? So he makes some sense to me there. Also, just a fun mascot. Kawhi Leonard has never played for Team USA. He's in the player pool, but has never played in Team USA. Injuries, obviously, and injury management, a large part of that. That he's back in the pool does not feel like an accident. Or maybe it is, or maybe it's just a deference to who he has been in the league. But I'd love to just see what it looked like. Because maybe, you mentioned everybody likes to get theirs. What if for a few weeks, Kawhi Leonard was like, I don't really care about taking shots. Like, I just want to go guard everybody. I don't think that would necessarily happen. But like, what if? It would be same argument for like Jimmy Butler coming back after, I think he was on the Rio team, right? like Jimmy Butler coming back and being like, obviously Jimmy Butler will go long stretches of actual NBA playoff games being like, I don't really care if I shoot. Let me just go have a fun time and try to mess up somebody else's night. My real answer, though, is one who's not in the player pool. But wait, I have to imagine.
Let me just stop you there. Because Kawhi, I texted USA PR after that post-game
scrum. You did reporting
scrum.
On this? I love this. This is incredible.
No. Well, before this, I said, hey, just a heads up. KD just kind of said to this group of people in Atlanta post-game that LeBron, Steph, KD, Embiid, Tatum, and Kawhi had all committed.
Oh, really?
He said that. On the record, that Kawhi was in. So, which I kind of left out of my original thing in the segment, you know, as a tease to set up this conversation.
Oh, so, okay. Really?
It is interesting to see
good
his
co-hosting
name.
By me. I definitely know what's happening here on our show.
I like to play tricks on Dan behind the scenes.
It's true.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that Kawhi is not on this list yet because KD kind of let the Kawhi out of the bag earlier and said he's good. And it didn't really get picked up. No one knew it, but I was standing right there. And he said, yeah, all these guys, Kawhi, he's in there. So I don't know why he's not on the list right now. It's definitely curious.
Yeah.
Who's your guy, though?
No, I mean, first off, it's good to know that my just like general idea is also something that they were already going to do. So clearly, maybe yeah. I should be heavily involved in USA basketball since I've got such a good idea for who should be on the team. Yeah. Bring Carmelo back, man. I just want to see it.
Yes.
I know he's not technically a player anymore. I know
he's a podcast host.
He's podcasting with the Kid Mero. But I kind of feel like if anybody has put in the sweat equity and the time with the USA basketball program to be able to come back for one last ride, it's Captain America, Carmelo Anthony, CACA, and let's get him back in there. And he could just ride the coattails of these other guys to an unprecedented medal count. That's what I'd like to see happen. I personally feel like he deserves it. The thing that I'm most worried about, though, so the real GM news wire this morning had the framing of the Embiid thing as Team USA is counting on Joel Embiid. And I was like, oh. You know, like, well, when you put it that way, it does.
So is everything the entire Delaware Valley.
Right. And everything feels a little more tenuous when it's like Team USA's hopes rest on the guy who is currently coming back from yet another devastating lower leg injury. And
devastating. He's back in mid-March. The Sixers have been confident all along. Back in mid-March, trading for Buddy Hield. They wouldn't have done that if they didn't think he'd be back. It's going to be great.
That's true. But devastating can be in terms of like a season ending or just the emotional wear and tear that it puts on a fan base. And yeah. As you mentioned, everybody in the Delaware Valley has been feeling it, including with every passing Sixers game they have to watch without Joel Embiid, where yeah. suddenly the evaluation of the roster looks a hell of a lot different than it did when Embiid was out there. But yeah, so whoever the 12th guy is, maybe another big guy makes sense. I like your Aaron Gordon pick, but I like mine for the vibes.
There you go. We're going to take these vibes on through an ad break. And we'll be right back after this. Welcome back to No Cap Room here on the Ball Don't Lie podcast. I put out an article on Wednesday about one Kevin Durant because I was on the phone with a scout friend one night who I was not watching the Kings Warriors game back on January 16th, when, like LeBron's epic comeback against the Clippers, the Suns bested them with a 22 point fourth quarter comeback against Sacramento that night, if you may recall. And this guy was like, dude, Kevin Durant, have you watched this guy defend this season? He is defending out of his mind. He was raving about how when the Suns had to go small, that he was taking Sabonis down low. He was switching out and he blocked Fox's shot in the perimeter and he forced a turnover from Malik Monk. And he's just like, man, this dude at 35, recovering from a torn Achilles. It's amazing what he's doing on defense and no one's talking about it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to Atlanta. Suns are going to be there. I'll talk to him about it. And after KD gave kind of a Kawhi out of the bag moment with, his scrum was over. I was like, hey, Kevin, just wanted to throw some questions about you about how great you're locking up dudes this year. And he definitely was happy to discuss.
Sure, but I would imagine so.
It was interesting for a couple of things. Just so if you hadn't read the article on Yahoo Sports, please go check it out. He said some great stuff. But the numbers definitely are very, very, very impressive, being that there's some wonky advanced ones that we stuck into the details where, according to Basketball Index, of all the players who've logged at least 1,500 minutes, which is not many, it was 57 as of this writing, but that just goes to show high usage. People are out there grinding on both sides of the court. He's blocked 43.3% of all shots he's contested, which is number one in the league. And he is guarding usage tier one players, the most ball dominant players in the league, 22.93% of the time, which is a career high for a 35-year-old man. To which Frank Vogel said, quote, he is more engaged when he's guarding a top guy. So all that, when I was then sifting through the audio and thinking about how to write this story, it's just really telling about how much Phoenix's title hopes, if we kind of link this back to the LeBron Lakers segment at the top of this, how much of the Suns' title hopes, which, don't get it twisted, they certainly have title hopes. They didn't go spend all of their valuable draft capital on Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and then send 3 second round picks out the door for Royce O'Neal if they didn't think they had a chance to win a title this season. And they're definitely one of the teams, just like last year, that people are wondering what there will be personnel ramifications if they do not make it deep into the playoffs this season. Just a lot's going to be coming down to this guy's ability to guard 1 through 5, which I don't think the Lakers, for example, are thinking about when it comes to 39-year-old LeBron James, which there are different circumstances, but at the same time, I mean, the Warriors aren't relying on Steph Curry to be a two-way dynamo. It's just, of all this stuff, of all the crowded landscape in the West with all these teams that have so much at stake, it is just fascinating to me that this dude, who is one of the greatest scorers of all time, whose season has kind of been highlighted noteworthy, like in the big blinking billboard of what the NBA pushes out and whatnot, for rising up the all-time scoring chart, he's at 9th now, he's coming for Shaq next. It's pretty amazing that he's A, capable of doing this at this level, and B, his team is going to be pretty insanely dependent on it in order for them to have success when it really matters.
Absolutely. There's a lot in there. And the story, I mean, not just saying this because I work with you, but I read it this morning to make sure I was ready for this. And it was really good and really interesting. It is.
Thanks, man.
Well, it's my pleasure. The first thing that I thought of when I'm reading it is, like, I was watching that game, and it made me think of, like, and the reason I know this is because as you make fun of me tweeting about everything, I was like, I'm pretty sure I tweeted about that. Quote, I know KD is not as nimble as he used to be, but the Kings just ran a screen to get Grayson Allen switched off Malik Monk so that he could go at KD. That made me make a weird noise. Yeah. So yeah, watching it, like, I remember watching that and going, like, you shouldn't be doing that. You should not be trying to get Kevin Durant into the action, Malik Monk. Yeah. Although, all due respect, I mean, Grayson Allen has performed, you know, he's held his own weight pretty well there. The second thing
I believe my crack team of researchers that I had, and I have a group text of researchers now. This is not a hyperbole. I learned that Grayson Allen is the Suns player who is guarding the usage tier one, you know, most ball dominant players, the most of anyone in Phoenix. So there will be a lot of pressure on him as well.
That was what I was thinking. I'm like, if Kevin Durant is guarding the highest usage guys this often, that's because they don't have another guy doing it. And so then you're thinking, mm-hmm. like, well, yeah, Josh Okogie hasn't made enough threes to be able to be on the court that often. Also, just maybe a little small for some of those matchups. You know, if you're relying on Beal, smaller in those matchups, relying on Booker, smaller in those matchups. So yeah, a lot comes down to depending on Durant, because just physically, he is capable of handling, you know, with a 7'5" wingspan, the way he can contest shots, as you mentioned, the way he can block the ones he does get to, all that kind of stuff. Like, it puts a lot on his plate. And I'm interested to see how this holds up. Like, the Suns didn't make multiple major additions at the trade deadline. Royce O'Neal obviously is part of that conversation. He will take on some of those more big wing responsibilities too.
I saw them in New York. They played Brooklyn that Wednesday, whatever it was, like January 28th or whatever. And then February 2nd in Atlanta, I've kind of followed them to we did a podcast down there, remember? Yeah. And I remember like that was the word from everyone in Phoenix, like right it was the week before the deadline. It was like, all right, we need a Royce O'Neal. We need a 6 foot, 6 to 8, preferably on the bigger side of that, but Royce is not guy who can like slot in to the front court next to KD when we're playing small ball five stuff, because like that's been their best lineup and they know it's kind of their ultimate, I don't know, cheat code, their ultimate lever to pull, their ultimate break glass in case of emergency lineup to go at. So that was really the only thing they looked at. Like there was all this talk about TJ McConnell and other point guards like dating back to the summer, but come February, come the trade deadline, it was that small ball four type guy.
And like that kind of lineup where Durant is the lone big is, it's not something that they've gone to a ton this year, but it's something that Durant teams have used over time because, like, I mean, I was going back to thinking about like when he was on the Warriors, like the 2017 mm-hmm. Warriors, he's like the backup center essentially in the finals. Like I remember writing a story about them going to him in those lineups. And it's because, he has that versatility. He has always been, you know, pretty good block rate for a wing. And he just has the size and he's developed the strength over time to be able to hold up in those matchups. The thing is, in order for that to work, and it's a similar conversation to some degree to where we talk about like Milwaukee, right? And it's like, well, how do the Bucks get to Giannis at the five? And obviously, you know, it's a different set of circumstances because Brook Lopez has been an elite defender and such a big part of that ecosystem. But when they're building out rosters every year in Milwaukee, it's like, can we get enough wings to get to good Giannis at the five lineups? The KD at the five lineups, Royce O'Neal obviously is going to wind up being a big part of that. But the best versions of what you can get to with the current roster as constructed is probably like some collection of Booker, Beal, Eric Gordon, Grayson Allen, Royce O'Neal, maybe Josh Okogie mixed in there. But that's kind of what you're pulling from. And thus far, those lineups have gotten torched in Phoenix. From cleaning the glass, this is like they've been outscored by 11.8 points per 100 possessions. Not a lot of like a heavy number of possessions, so it's a pretty small sample, but they're giving up 125 points per 100 and they're not scoring at that level. And the goal will be you have KD out there with shooters all around him, and it's just, we're going to outscore you. And like that, the vision of that is, we are not going to be able to stop Nikola Jokic anyway, especially when Jusuf Nurkic gets into foul trouble. So spread them out, shooters everywhere, playmakers everywhere, let God sort them out. And they have not gotten there yet. And what you wonder, like a coach like Frank Vogel, who is just so like, has always been I want as many big guys on the court as possible and as many like, you know, defensive rebounders and fail safes there. Like that's just not going to be part of those alignments in Phoenix with KD at the five, unless KD does it, right? And so that's like, you're right to say it's going to require a lot from him. And when you're already requiring, you know, 30 plus a night on 50, 40, 90 shooting or whatever it is, like that's a big responsibility to put on his shoulders. But that's also the cost of doing business, right? You go and you get that guy, you give up everything for him, you reorient the team around this kind of offensive approach with players of this, everybody else on the roster of that kind of size. It means that more responsibility for the big man stuff is going to fall on the tallest guy. And KD certainly is that.
Yeah, they're not stopping Nikola Jokic. Nobody's stopping Nikola Jokic, right? Which Draymond Green showed some rare humility and saying that on his podcast recently after Denver came back and shellacked Golden State on Sunday. I remember waiting for the subway and I had like 8 minutes it was like the end of the line at Eaton Square because they had some construction going on Sundays as the subway system tends to do. Yeah. So I had like 8 minutes. I was like, oh, I'll pull up League Pass. And Golden State was up like 15 on Denver in the start of the third. And then I logged off after the train started moving. And then I just checked before I went to bed. I was like, oh, Denver won by 20? And that's just the nuggets of it all. But Golden State, similar to Phoenix, since Draymond Green has come back, they have gone away. And I wrote about this a little bit in the Jonathan Kuminga story that we talked about last week, or that I wrote last week that we talked about beforehand,
right?
Where... They Steve Kerr and Golden State's coaching staff, they were trying to get this Kevon Looney, Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry lineup that they won a title with in 2022, and all the numbers suggested was like the most effective five-man lineup in the NBA. They were trying this year to get that thing back and rolling. And Looney has kind of maybe taken a step back. Wiggins has just not really, didn't really find that consistency from the beginning. And there was all this tension about, do we put Jonathan Kuminga in the starting lineup? Him and Wiggins together weren't really working out so well. I remember in that story, like their first 130 minutes together, they were like negative 30 per 100 in net rating. All of a sudden, Draymond Green came back, and those three guys together have been pretty damn perfect, and the Warriors have been one of the best teams in the league. I remember when I tweeted out the JK story last week, that the tease was like, his rise into a bona fide number two has them back in the thick of the Western Conference playoff picture. And some haters were like, playoff picture? They're the 10 seed. I'm like, well, they've had like the best record in the NBA or one of in the last 20 games. So, Dan, you took a deeper look at what's going on in the Bay, especially with Draymond back. What say you?
Yeah. So, I mean, they play the Knicks on national TV on Thursday night. They have another national game this weekend. Like there's always a lot of eyes on the Warriors, but right now it's particularly interesting because on the other side of the trade deadline, yeah, on the other side of Draymond coming back, they've won 11 of 14. They've been top 10 on both sides of the ball for the last 6 weeks. They are up it's only in the 10 seed because the other teams in the West are winning a lot too, but they're, you know, a couple of games out of, you know, rising up in that play-in mix. And they're playing arguably as well as any of those teams in that group to, you know, looking to get up. And we'll talk a little bit about the play-in mix in both conferences in a few minutes here. But it's more like we were, and very understandably so, we were talking about, is this the end of the line for the Warriors? Is this the end of the line for Draymond? Like, he just got the new extension of the new contract there, but the vibes were rancid after the beginning of the season and him getting himself run twice and missing like half of the first 25 games. And then even more than that, it's like, is this how one of the great proud players and most like decorated players of this last decade, is this how he goes out? Does he go out sad like this? And the answer has turned out to be, at least in the short term, no, he is capable of still like riding that line and harnessing it. And it is a reminder, if nothing else, that as much as all of this has been about Steph Curry and everything the Warriors have been, the identity they've built, the way it's all oriented, what they hope to be, what they've been and what they think they still can be is about Stephen Curry. It is also almost equally about Draymond Green. It is about the way that it is not a coincidence that Steph went through like the worst dip of his season when Draymond was out and then immediately started firing like MVP Steph when Draymond came back. It is not a coincidence that Andrew Wiggins went from like lost in the woods for a long time to suddenly rebounding his position again really well and shooting like 68% at the rim and 45% from three once you had Draymond back in the lineup. It is not a coincidence that you can play small and coordinate these lineups and get everybody moving in the same direction once you've got Draymond as what Steve Kerr called like the middle linebacker in the back of the on the back line of the defense. They have defended more effectively in his minutes than anybody but the Wolves. And the Wolves are like a team full of guys that are 5 inches taller than Draymond. But then there's who the Warriors are. And so I don't know. Like, there's not a grand revelation in the piece, I don't think, outside of just like when you're not seeing it every day, you know, absences or out of sight, out of mind. But when you're not seeing it every day, you kind of forget. They just haven't made many defenders like or many dudes like Draymond that are defenders at that level, playmakers at that level, that also when you reintroduce them, they don't need shots. They don't need usage. So you can still big up all those young guys that came to the forefront, like Brandon Pajemski and Jonathan Kuminga are taking more shots per game since Draymond came back than when he was out. You know, like, and that's it's interesting in that, like, we can talk about the whether it's positive or negative, that the Warriors have wedded themselves to Draymond Green in this way. Obviously, the violent outbursts, and really kind of no other way to put them, have been damaging to the Warriors. Like they are currently trying to climb out of a hole that Draymond essentially put them in, both with his absence and also with his play at the beginning of the season. He was not good for the first 15 games of the season that he played. But this is why they are this committed to him, because they know that he, like, the thing that makes them special, the number one is Steph, but number two is the way that he unlocks Steph and the way that he infuses everything else with the kind of energy that can get Wiggins back, that can get Kuminga elevated, that can make these things work. And so whether it winds up as being enough, I don't know. I mean, like we said, 10th in the West, I think they have they're 3.5 games out of 7th with 25 to go. They got to jump a lot of people to get out of really bad matchups, even just to get out of having to win multiple games to get to 8. But the way they're playing now and what they've found when he was away in terms of Kuminga and getting to Pajemski and getting Clay on board with moving to the bench eventually, like all that kind of stuff, what they found while he was away and what he has brought back is what makes them the kind of team that I think is really going to be interesting to watch down the stretch, and maybe a really, really big bummer of a matchup for a 1 or a 2 or a 3 seed if you wind up getting to that situation.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great segue into our final segment here. The TM play and push.
Bringing it back. The play and push. I feel like we haven't talked about it TMTM in quite a while.
I mean, it's that time of year. It's been a glorious 12 months. The Bulls no longer have Patrick Beverley. The jury is still out. Patrick Beverley is still not having sex before games. But
we do need some more reporting on that. Is that connected at all to the belt to ass tour that he's been going on since he was in Philly and then brought it to Milwaukee?
It really might be. I mean, that is a question I'll have to ask the next time Patrick Beverley. Although I never really tell stories like this, but I'm just going to say it because we're already gotten off the rails a little quickly.
Sure.
Opening night of the season, I was in Milwaukee for Philly Bucks, and I wanted to see Dame's, you know, debut. I wanted to link up with the homies from Philly, and I was just kind of lingering around the locker room just to like say what's up to Joel. And it didn't go so well because he was pissed that they had lost. But I'm like waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's very awkward when you're just like in a locker and waiting for one guy, because there's nothing really for you to do other than like avoid eye contact with other people.
Yes.
But then I was looking at the locker next to Patrick Beverley trying to see something. I forget what it was, but he was like rubbing lotion on his body. And as I was like looking away, we made glancing eye contact, and he just said something like, "Yo, this guy's looking at me while I'm rubbing baby lotion on my body." It was a tough one, but we're gonna move on.
It is difficult to know the best way to be professional in all those situations, and I'm sure that you did the best you could.
Just also strip down to your underwear and be like, we're both in the same boat, so maybe I'll try that next time.
Firm disagree. All right, so the TM play and push.
The TM play and push. So the West is kind of set. Like, there are the 10 teams. No offense to Houston and Utah. We got Phoenix in 5 right now. What? You want to
I don't think Utah is particularly offended. I think Utah made decisive moves to try to avoid being in the top 10 yet again.
Yes. The Rockets are Rockets. No, I'm just kidding. They definitely kind of fallen a bit since
a
strong start. But to your point about matchups for Golden State, it's going to be a bloodbath in the Western Conference no matter what. Like, if you are anyone of the top four, which as of this recording, there's been this top four pretty much for a couple of weeks now in Minnesota, OKC, Denver, LA, the Clippers, in whatever order you want to rank them or whatever. And then one of those four teams who has worked so hard to get home court advantage, or all those four teams, they're going to end up having Phoenix, New Orleans, Sacramento, Dallas, the Lakers, and the Golden State. There's going to be four of those teams coming out of that muck. So it's going to be a bloodbath no matter what, versus like the East. Yeah, you've got the defending conference champions, Miami, Philly, who knows what's going to happen with Joel Embiid. Indiana's going to be a nightmare for anyone with their pace with Tyrese Halliburton, with the continuing synergy that I expect to be blossomed between him and Pascal Siakam. Then the last three teams, I know my Magic have been a fun story this year, but with all due respect, I don't think they're going to strike the fear of God into Boston, let's say, if they got the 8 seed, like playing Golden State would in theory for any team in the West. Same thing with Chicago, same thing with Atlanta, where who really knows what's going to happen with the Hawks now that Trae Young's supposed to be out for roughly a month. But is there any team in the East, Dan, of that group that you think like you are willing to gamble and bet is going to be making their way out of the play-in push and establishing themselves as a top 5 or 6 team in the East?
Yeah, I think, and I want to think some more about this, and I want, it might be a topic for an upcoming episode of one of our shows, but like I'm interested in the Heat because they've gotten to this point, you know, top 10 defense. Where are they now? They're 33-25. So they're only a game and a half out of fourth right now. Despite having all of their main guys miss significant time, like they, and even, you know, they make the trade for Terry Rozier and then he barely plays and then he goes out. And so they're only kind of now starting to get everybody together and on the same page. They have perhaps not coincidentally won 5 straight games. Jimmy Butler pretty famously only really gets going after the All-Star break. So we are in his time of year. That like it would not surprise me at all, especially, and this is maybe like on the other side of it, I'm starting to get concerned, not just personally, but also like there's a level of concern I've got that the Knicks are going to wind up dropping out of the top 6. They are right now, they are 35-24. They're now 11 and a half games behind Boston. So obviously, like, you know, they're not going to get up into that 2-3 mix in all likelihood. Cleveland is up there, but Milwaukee's up there. There's a big gap between them and the Knicks. They're only a game and a half up on Miami and Philly and Indiana. Like one, you know, win, loss, the other, either way, and the Knicks are in 7 already. And we're a month now removed from when they lost both OG Anunoby and Julius Randle. We still don't know for sure if Julius Randle is going to have surgery. Like they've obviously been trying to avoid it and like have him rehab. That they, you know, the reporting was that surgery is not off the table yet. So when he gets back and in what form, who knows? OG Anunoby, obviously, you know, they are. It's all like dated. You know, we'll, you know, there's no timeline just yet. We'll see. Mitchell Robinson, same deal. Now you have Isaiah Hartenstein managing Achilles tendinopathy, and like he's back and then he's out, and he's back and then he's out. Now Jalen Brunson is dealing with cervical soreness in his neck. And he missed the game against the Pelicans the other night. The Knicks, especially without Randle and without Anunoby, the Knicks cannot score without Jalen Brunson on the floor. You make the deals for Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks with the hope that they will be 7th, 8th, 9th guys adding to this other core that we saw look so good for New York after the Anunoby trade. And the Knicks just don't have that lineup. And it remains very unclear when they will have it again and what it will look like when they do. And if they're 7 or 8 by the time they get it, you know, of what value? And I think, you know, it's interesting to me looking at it right now. Like there's all these different projection models. Basketball Reference is one that I look at fairly frequently in terms of what their playoff modeling suggests. And they've got Orlando in 5th. Finishing 5th, as opposed to, you know, like above Philly, above Miami, above Indiana. And we'll see, you know, but they're a team that would be like, I think you're right. Like, I don't think they're putting the fear of God into Boston, but if you are like a shakier 2-3-4, they feel like a team that would be an absolute pain in the ass to have to deal with the way they defend and with the possibility that Franz or Paolo Banchero could just like carry them through a quarter here and there. So,
little Hedo Turkoglu, Rashard Lewis impression. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, they've been one of the better stories all season in terms of the way that they've not only like outpaced their projections, but stayed there. So, well, you know, yeah. What would be another 20 games of it or so? Could be.
Yeah. I I'm rooting for the Pacers to get the 7 seed because I want to go to Indianapolis for a play-in game. That's just my take. That's what I want to do. I think it'd be a really fun environment. And I think that it could be something, like I said this to friends with the Timberwolves, and I know this could sound a little bit like a hindsight 2020. Before our man Pat Bev jumped up on the scores table and became a meme, I remember telling people with the Timberwolves, hey, I think it could be really good for you guys, because they're like, we just want the 6 seed. We don't want to deal with the play-in. I thought it could have been momentous for them to have that victory, you know, protect home court, have a whole thing. And they almost did go in and knock off Memphis right after that. So I think for Indy as well, they're kind of in that exact type of mold where the Wolves were a couple years ago, where their young pieces are starting to turn the corner. And by that, I mean, like, I'm not talking about Tyrese, just like down the roster, like Benedict Mathurin's kind of really grown. And that was a big influence in trading Buddy Hield out the door.
Right.
And it's just that type of, you know, you don't get a playoff series win, but to really do something in that type of spotlight on national TV, I think would mean a lot for a team like Indy. Same with Orlando. If Orlando ends up getting a home game and they take care of business, I think that would be something to hang your hat on and like rally around. In the West, there really aren't any of these like young, plucky upstart teams now. Like everyone has been kind of been there before in playoff stakes. And I mean, the Pelicans made a fun run out of the play-in tournament a few years ago without Zion Williamson and then took 2 games off of Phoenix. But I do think, to me, of all the teams that are in this little muck here, I'm most interested on if Dallas hangs around and if Dallas actually makes the playoffs, being that we talked about this last trade deadline, sending out 2 strong salaries and good players and a pick and seconds for Kyrie Irving, who then you give a massive deal to and takes up a large percentage of your salary cap. It started to significantly limit the moves that Dallas had in place, and it married an incredibly ball dominant, although incredibly gifted scorer. And by all accounts, it has gone well between Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. You have started the clock on the whispers and what have you about, is Luka going to want to stay in Dallas long term? And if you're a Mavericks fan listening to this, like our producer, John Gennaro, I am not saying that, you know, this, put Luka next to Giannis and Joel or whatever on top of the Knicks, sure, hopeful wish charts and Don Mitchell. I'm not saying that because I think we're far away from that. However, trading a first for Daniel Gafford and a first for PJ Washington are 2 players that you could look at and say, again, potential overpays. And this, the Mavericks had to send stuff to OKC to manufacture another first in one of those deals. And both those guys were supposed to help a front court and an overall defense that Derek Lively has helped a lot, but all 3 of those dudes can't play at the same time, which to me is something that, this is a not apples to apples comparison, but it makes me think back to when the Clippers made a big move at the end of the Lob City era to bring in Danilo Gallinari, when defensively him, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan didn't necessarily jive together. So I just think there's potentially more at stake there. Like, sure, you've got LeBron at 39, and who knows how much longer he'll be doing this, and the Warriors are battling the end of a dynasty. But it, just in terms of a team that has, like, none of these, like, the Pelicans, sure, but Zion and B.I. and all that, like, the fit questions are always going to be there until they're not. And they were just here at MSG, as you mentioned, on Tuesday, and talking to people around the team. Like, the Pelicans held pat at the deadline partially because they know, like, we're pretty damn good, and we just kind of have to get all of our guys together and really evaluate how good we really are to make major moves from here on out. I think the Mavericks, though, they've got this player who's all world in Luka, who has proven already that he can kind of carry a team to the Western Conference Finals. And they've invested all this capital, you know, doesn't work out with Grant Williams. And you do have to commend Dallas for flipping him immediately, when a lot of teams would have clutch their pearls and not wanted to admit a mistake and what have you. But it just, to me, feels like that situation has just like more, I don't know, not angst, but just some more kind of feeling about what's at stake in terms of like the long-term health of, like, with everything the Lakers and Warriors are trying to fight to keep, Dallas hasn't really even gotten there yet. And they need to create an era to hold on to before it's too late, basically.
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Like once you've already sort of, once you are pod committed, you start to see what the other side of the, you know, the abyss looks like. And you're like, oh man, like we don't have as many things we can throw between us and that as we used to, because we've already used a lot of it. And they've gotten pretty to really good production when they've gotten those guys on the floor together. I think they're like plus nine per 100 when they've got Luka and Kyrie on the floor together. Kyrie has, from by all account or from the sound of it, been like everything they could have asked for in terms of what he does when he's on the court and then the way he fits into the organization. That's pretty cool. And there's just a question of, are you going to be able to be good enough defensively when it counts against really good teams? And that's been the question since the beginning, and we'll see how much Daniel Gafford and PJ Washington are able to impact that. It's also just funny to think about, they are one insane Max Strus buzzer beater and another like last possession loss to Cleveland. Like the Cavaliers could wind up being the reason that they don't make the top six. Like those two, like, and every team has, you know, if not this, then what, you know, if, you know,
if one's game,
if, you know, the Knicks Rockets game the other way, right? Like, you know, there's all of these like bang, bang calls at the end, or, you know, ridiculous shots or whatever.
The Buffalo Wild Wings games.
Yes, right. But when the margin is like the gap between 5 and 8 in the West is one game, and the gap between 5 and 9 is 3. Like the margins are super thin, and there's all NBA superstar talent across those teams. And so like when everybody's healthy in a conference, and like a team like the Wolves makes a huge leap, or the team like the Thunder makes the huge leap, it kind of leaves everybody else scrambling for the lifeboats. And so, yeah, I mean, the glass half full look at it from a fan's perspective is like, you're going to see like an all NBA team in the play-in games, you know, kind of whoever it winds up being. The glass half empty side is that means that a lot of those, there's going to be some superstar Hall of Fame level talents that are watching the rest of the playoffs like the rest of us, which I guess maybe then we spin it forward into like who is disgruntled after that. But yeah, Dallas is a great version of that to watch. Phoenix as well. Like if this doesn't go their way, like how can you go all in the way that they've gone all in and then be like, you know, we don't even make it out of the play? And like that would be nuts. But similar, it's like same question. Like you get to the conference finals last year if you're the Lakers, and then you don't make it out of the play-in. You get to the second round and you give Draymond $100 million and you make the Chris Paul trade, and you don't get out of the play-in if you're the Warriors. Like all of these franchises have made such significant commitments that, you know, to come away empty would be just like catastrophic and devastating for them.
Yeah, to that point, and then we'll keep this going. There's so much at stake for all these teams that there's, and I believe I've said this before on the show, there's a lot of stuff in the air, a lot of heft in the air about certain, you know, could heads roll? Could certain things happen depending on what these outcomes are? You know, last year, we didn't expect necessarily Monty Williams to be gone and Mike Budenholzer to be gone and, you know, go on down the list. So there's definitely plenty at stake, jobs on the line, legacies on the line. Just like they were in New Orleans last week when I went on a legitimate 72-hour bender with all my favorite cap guys in the league.
So So on Divine Intervention this week, I had Shemit Dua. We talked about the Pelicans.
Oh, I listened.
And he talked about being a judge at the... Now, I'm going to get the name wrong. It's a Tulane what?
Pro basketball negotiation competition.
And it sounds extremely high-minded and sophisticated and serious. And then he told me he saw you down there, and I instantly had some questions about how all of those things it was. You did this judging, but also went on a 72-hour bender? This seems like a bad mix. Tell me about this.
That's how it works. I think, look, we all fly in Wednesday night, have a dinner, and then it's New Orleans. New Orleans is one of the only places I've ever been to outside of New York, and maybe even beyond New York's magnitude of, like, you can go out till six if you want to on any given night. And it's definitely a work hard, play hard situation, which is pretty much the case in every NBA gathering. Like,
sure,
if you're waking up early at six in a hotel at Summer League to go to the gym, get a little sweat on, there's probably people walking in from whatever shenanigans they got into that night. Yeah, it's a business casual dress code. I brought out the blazer and some button downs that I got tailored perfectly in Bangkok. And they didn't fit so perfectly after one night of eating and drinking, I can tell you that. And yeah, I don't know. I said this on our friend Katie Heindel's show. Like, I do think part of my ability to connect with people who work in the league has been my ability to share many a beverage late into the night. So you work hard, you play hard, you talk about interesting. It's also what I really like about Tulane. Like, Sloan is coming up this weekend, the Sloan Conference in Boston, which I will not be going to. I haven't gone to in years now. I used to go when I was back a student in Boston. I went up there many years ago, 2017, after I think that was the year Barack Obama talked, and I remember falling asleep during Obama's big presentation because it was so boring, man. Oh my God.
Sort of a work hard, play hard kind of vibe. Yeah, I get it.
But also, can that guy talk for 15 minutes and say nothing? But like, even, you know, the G League showcase, when you go and ostensibly you're there to talk to people, there's also games you can watch. Like Sloan, you're just there to rub elbow. And that stuff has always felt icky, and it's felt more icky to me as I like feel comfortable in the people I know around the league. The really fun thing about the Tulane event is that all these students come to compete, and they are posing as, you know, Jonathan Kuminga's representation or the Golden State Warriors. And they're talking about things that are going to be coming up. Sadiq Bey's restricted free agency was one of them. James Harden's contract with the Clippers, which, it's so funny. If you're a student listening to this and you were competing in the competition, or you're a law student now who would like to, if you are ever posing as the front office of the team who is owned by the most eccentric billionaire affiliated with the NBA, don't be afraid to spend his money. It is so amazing how all these law students don't want to give James Harden $40 million when Steve Ballmer will be willing to write the check. So yeah, it's just, it's fun to, like, everyone's there ostensibly to give back to the kids and also have a great time.
I was going to say, and also so. This other part, and if you are a law student who wants to participate, just know Jake might be absolutely out of his mind hungover when he's listening to your presentation.
I think that's, you know what, part of the job is to be able to mask it as well as you can.
Right. And, there's an act as if component to it, I'm sure. So these are basically reporting trips at which you drink.
Everyone's a reporter. Every trip is a reporting trip in which I drink.
Okay, fair enough. All right. I respect it.
Like, the job is kind of like being in sales. Like, you take clients out, you slap the card down, you share some tales, and then hopefully one day you can all collaborate together and make some NBA transactions come to life.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, that sounds interesting. It sounds fascinating. It sounds like also this is the kind of place where you develop stories that you kind of can't share on a microphone.
There's nothing. I haven't said anything of substance. Yeah, I've only talked about me. I haven't shared. I mean, what Shamit was starting to talk to you about, there's no way I'll ever say at a public forum at all. I'm not a narc, man. I think that's also a big part of this. You got to be able to hang
keep
with
secrets
the team,
too, right?
And yeah, it's fun.
So I just love the, I love that this starts with, I was going to be a guest and a judge at a law school, right? At a law school's,
and they thank me for coming every year because I'm so good at providing strong feedback for all the students.
I have no doubt about that. I have no doubt about that. I'm just talking about the chain where this goes. I'm going to a law school to be a judge in a negotiation competition, mm-hmm. to I will never talk about the stories that I developed while I was out there. There's some things that I will take to the grave because I would never share because I'm not a narc. And I'm like, what kind of this is how I'm bad at business. I don't understand how negotiations work.
You just like need to be cool and act cool.
I'm out.
And just go with the night. That's kind of the strategy. It's really all it is.
Oh my God. Please put that on either a shirt or on a social graphic that's like a picture of a wolf howling at a moon. And it's the quote and it's Jake's name underneath it.
The one advice I'll always give to anyone, though, is don't chase the night. Chasing the night leads to many a disaster. But we hope you chase the next episode of No Cap Room here on the Paul Live Podcast Network.
You just have to be cool and act cool and then go with the night. What is our NBA broadcast? Okay, this is great.
That's all we've got for you today. Thanks to super producer John Gennaro, who does all the things to make this show look and sound great. Subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you're currently listening on and leave us a 5-star review. We thank you for listening. And we'd appreciate it if you came back for another Leap Day episode of No Cap Room.
In 4 years.